Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Yeah. Well, Megan, we have a lot to break down this week, because after last week's Below Deck Med, we knew we were in for something, but with this week's, I am floored.
I know, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts on everything. And then we also have a big episode of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Teddy's baby shower that was so not child-friendly.
Plus Real Housewives of Potomac, these rumors are getting even crazier when it comes to Monique. Who started them? Where did they come from? I don't know, but we're going to break it down.
Plus, we have an interview with E's Nina Parker, host of Bravo's Race in America special.
And of course, we'll wrap up with Rose and Thorne. Let's start with Below Deck Med.
Okay.
So the big thing, I guess, that comes out of the whole situation with Hannah is there has been a violation of maritime law because of the medication that Hannah has on board that was not registered in advance. So the interesting thing is, if she doesn't own up to it either, when Captain Sandy calls her out and is like, I know that these are here. And Hannah says, I haven't taken any on board.
Is it for sure clear that she she had them out, but we don't actually see her pop a pill?
I guess that's true. We don't actually see her do it, but when she has the panic attack, she asks for it, and Malia, we assume, provides it for her, but we don't actually see her. I mean, we have seen her take some pills on board, but they could be vitamins for all we know. I don't know.
This is how I feel about the situation. I was so heated last week about the fact that Malia went and told Captain Sandy this thing. And I was wondering if this week would be different. I feel like had we just stuck with the whole, it's against maritime law to have a prescription that's not registered with the boat, I would have been like, you're right, that's a fireable offense. Captain Sandy did the right thing. Where Captain Sandy totally lost me is when she says, and you know, Hannah, I just am not comfortable going out to sea with someone who's having panic attacks.
Hannah, with everything that's been going on with you, hyperventilating at 4 a.m. on the floor with Malia. Right now, I can't go to sea with you. I have clients, okay. I have people. Are you gonna finish? Let me finish. I have the utmost compassion for you, but at this point, for the rest of the season, I'm gonna finish it just with the crew.
Oh, made me so angry.
Yeah, so this whole situation, I mean, in all honesty, is really rough. I mean, Malia does come across, I think, as a snitch, like you had said.
Yes.
I really do.
A snake.
And even Hannah calls her that. In the
I interview. Know.
I was like, oh my God.
Same page.
And I really do feel for Hannah in this situation, because like you could see it on her face and she just feels so defeated almost with this. Like, I think it was just the last like kick in the crotch that really took her out to be like, I'm done with this. You know, like it was really, it sealed the deal. Like, she is over this industry. She is over this whole situation. You know, she did get caught in a bit of a lie, but I wonder, like, if she had gotten on the boat with this medication. Malia knew about it. If Malia had said to Hannah, I know you have this stuff, is it registered? And gave Hannah the opportunity to register it, would the consequences have been the same thing? Would Sandy have had to let her go because she had already had it on board and didn't register it? But like, what if she had done it? What if Malia had just handled it a little bit differently? Would Hannah be able to maintain her job? That's what I am curious about.
Well, and even if not, like I said last week, to me, the fact that Malia didn't go to Hannah first and say, look, I'm giving you the opportunity to tell Captain Sandy, it just is so snake-like.
Yeah. Is it the industry itself, do you think? Because Hannah makes a reference to that where she's just like, this is a dog-eat-dog world. Like,
yes,
watch your back. Right. This is how it is. I mean, I do feel like we've heard that from Kate Chastain before. We've seen that kind of behavior on this show, you know, where it is a little bit more cutthroat in this industry, but it's also a very small industry and a lot of these people do know each other. So it's just a little bit like, are you really willing to totally burn a bridge like this and not think that there's going to be maybe long-term consequences? As kind of what Malia did.
You know, I think I just also feel like I need to reiterate the point that, like, I don't think that anxiety keeps people from doing their jobs well. I think it doesn't even usually manifest itself during outwardly stressful times. Like, we saw how Hannah, it happens in the middle of the night out of nowhere. It's like your brain, like, finally processing things that you weren't in the moment. So it just, to me, is such a misunderstanding of it. And it just really made me disappointed and Captain Sandy.
Can I also just point out that the generation above us, everyone who's older than we are, refers to marijuana as pot. Like, we don't call it that. Like, I just think it's so funny. There is a certain age group of people who, like, they just refer to it as pot. I feel like that's what it was in, like, the 60s and 70s. Everyone was talking about pot, you know? So, and that just sort of stuck.
Can I tell you, Aaron always used to refer to it as pot. And I was like, how old are you? Like, no one says.
No, I just straight up say weed.
And pot.
First of all, when Sandy followed Hannah into her room, into her cabin, to make sure she wasn't flushing anything.
Should I be in the cabin with her? You think she's flushing everything? I'm going to go make sure, like, it's not being destroyed. Hannah, don't, can you please bring your,
sure,
bring it
can
all.
I go just, to the bathroom?
Yeah, but give me your drugs.
What did you think of that?
I mean, that made me really uncomfortable because also, like, I understand what Sandy was doing and it didn't occur to her until it was almost too late. Like, will Hannah just be getting rid of the evidence? But it goes to show that she really didn't trust Hannah. And even if Hannah did flush something, obviously, there are cameras rolling all the time and something would have been caught. But just when she walks in, she knocks, but then opens the door and then opens the door to the bathroom. And Hannah's like pants are unbuttoned. So it's like very obvious that she did just have to pee and she wasn't trying to hide anything. And I was a little bit like,
well, and you can see it in Hannah's face, like just this, you are treating me like a criminal right now.
Right. I felt like really uncomfortable for Hannah. And I just wanted to be like, you know, she didn't really have anybody in that moment to lean on. We do see her, you know, call Josh and talk to him for a bit. And she's like pacing back and forth and kind of throwing a little bit of shade at the camera guys, like, you know, which I like that breaking fourth wall moment because I feel like that was an important time to do it.
Because why would she say?
She was just like, I can do this all day, you guys, because they were just following her back and forth on the dock, but she wasn't Mike.
Oh, my f***ing God. We can go up and down all day, boys.
I did want to reach out through the screen and like be like, it's going to be okay, Hannah, you know, because she really didn't have anybody on that boat in that moment that she could really lean on. And, you know, especially without Kiko there, I feel like if Kiko had been on the boat, he might have been one of the first people she went to be like, this is what's happening. Like, I need to talk for a second. Like, I'm leaving. But I don't think she felt like she had anybody, especially Captain Sandy in that moment, to really go to.
When Captain Sandy went out to her, I got very nervous because I feel like Hannah looked and probably felt like a trapped animal. And for sometimes you need a minute, and for Sandy to immediately be getting in her face about like trying to, I don't know what she wanted from Hannah. She wanted Hannah to be like, it's okay that you fired me. It's not okay. Like, you're not going to get that.
I know. What's funny about that is just the way you said it. I remember when I got laid off from one of my jobs in LA, and I was really close with my bosses at the time. Like, I used to dog sit for them. I would stay at their house when they were out of town. And I remember when they laid me off, my boss started crying the most, and I was like comforting her, and
she was like
I'm so sorry, I just feel so bad, like I just, you know, it's not you, like personally, like whatever. And I was like, it's okay, it's okay. And she was like, you shouldn't be comforting me, like I should be comforting you. But it was like my very last job in LA, where it was like at that point I kind of knew, okay, I'm gonna move back to the East Coast if something happens with this job. So it was all, you know, meant to be, because here I am today. But it was just so funny because, like you said, you know, what did Sandy expect Hannah to say? Like, it's okay, I'm not upset. You know, like, I don't know what kind of resolution Sandy was looking for.
And by the way, I agree with Hannah. No, I think you care about your job, and I get that. I think that that is why you need those boundaries and those lines of separation, but I don't think you care about Hannah.
Well, it's also like she straight up says that she could have and would have fired Hannah many times before. So
it just made me so mad. What are you doing? You've really upset this person, and now you're just, you're going and going and going.
I'd be really curious to get Kate's perspective on this whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
Because she's obviously been in the yachting industry for a long time. She knows a lot of this stuff. She knows Hannah very well. I think she'd have a pretty unique perspective on the whole thing. So maybe in the next few weeks, we should reach out and get a little, some thoughts from Kate.
Can I tell you, my cat clearly knows I'm getting heated about this because she's like coming over and like, are you okay?
Like, you're like, no, I'm not okay. Okay.
I'm not okay, actually. I'm very upset and I don't know what to do about it.
Okay. Well, outside of this whole Hannah thing, like, she's out. Bugsy's now chief stew. We are down a second stew once again, but we are off to a new charter with a new chef. And I'm not feeling great about Tom after this episode. What are you thinking?
My thought is, why are all chefs assholes?
Right? Except for Kiko.
Except for Kiko. But that's exactly right. Like, for whatever, it makes me so mad that I just hate any sort of thing where mean people or unprofessional people are elevated. And it's the good people who get sort of stomped on.
Right. I see exactly what you're saying.
Kiko was pure of heart and we destroyed him.
Right. We ruined him. Okay. It was that Las Vegas dinner. Ruined him.
Exactly.
Well, it feels like Tom is already starting to crack a bit, right? I mean, he's on day one, and by the time they make it to dinner, it's kind of falling apart for him already. I feel like he does have enough experience that he shouldn't quite be overwhelmed at this point. Like, it doesn't seem to be adding up to me, like how he's so stressed out with what's going on. And I don't know.
It's also like, I'm sure that there are plenty of like refined people who charter a yacht. But I think that more often than not on this show, what we're going to see are people who wish they were refined yacht people and instead are just, you know, new to this. So
this group is a little pervy, right? Is this what we're getting at? There's like the massive dildo.
Yeah, like they just don't seem like they know much about the finer things in life, if I were to guess. So for him to be shocked that they don't know what poached is, like, I think that you don't know your audience.
That is very true. That is very true, because maybe he didn't get a good enough read on them when they showed up, but they do seem like the new money type where, you know, they were...
Like, they probably would have loved that Vegas dinner.
Oh my God, totally. That's true. I mean, poached lobster sounds so good to me. When I was hearing that, I was like, that sounds incredible.
I think the thing is, he is probably an amazing chef, but just can't handle the other part of it, which is not everyone's going to recognize that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, as unrefined as these guests are, they still don't deserve to have shells in their oysters that were not properly shucked.
That's true. That was just That was just, what?
What's that?
Full of shell.
Oh, do you want to spit in here? Spit in there.
Mine was full of shells.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah.
Are you f***ing kidding me? I did too. Yeah,
you did?
Yeah, we had like big pieces of shell. Really,
they all had shells on their stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, at that rate, you shouldn't even serve the oysters if you can't properly shuck them. It's just too risky. And just don't do it. Even if they requested it, just be like, sorry, we couldn't get any today or something, you know?
Oh my God, though, when Bugsy threw out that potato, I thought he was going to hit her.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I didn't like that reaction. I don't trust that reaction.
It's too angry.
And there's something, it's too angry. And he seems very quiet and reserved in his interviews. And his accent is like very posh, very Downton Abbey. But it feels like there is some rage there. Like that there is something just beneath the surface that's about to blow. And you know, if we want to talk about what we see in the mid-season teaser, we are going to see him blow up at least once or twice again in the next 8 episodes.
And it does upset me, even though I'm not very happy with her right now. I feel terrible for Malia because I know that feeling of your partner's not okay, so you're taking on that emotional responsibility. And she is been doing this on-camera thing for a lot longer than him, so she knows to take him aside and be like, you look like a dick right now, you need to stop, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a tough position for her to be in because, you know, he was just coming to visit her and he got thrown into this, so sure, he might be overwhelmed, but it does feel like she's going to be the one that has to check in with him emotionally and try to manage his experience, but also...
Plus also be a bosun, right? And like run her own team.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like it's good when you mix professionalism and romance. Like, I don't think it works. I mean, we see that a lot with boatmances.
And that's why I've always had to turn you down. It's not because I wanted to, Eric. It's because I know that like we can't mix business and pleasure.
Right, right. No, I get it. I get it. It's fine. You know, it's something that I'm coping with every day. Speaking of the mid-season teaser, obviously we have another position that needs to be filled. There's a second stew position that is open. And based on what we saw in the tease, I have a prediction as to who it is.
Well, you, not only do you have a prediction, you made me feel so stupid that I didn't realize who it was. And now I do.
I mean, there is a very distinct sound that made me say, we have coming back.
I guess we'll see.
It's just a thought, but they really set it up and gave us like a little audio of a laugh, of a little like jolly sound that is very familiar.
And you see the back of her head. I did not put it together. I don't know why.
I mean, if it is her, I'm just sad that we're not getting her sooner because she's amazing. And I think her energy on the boat right now would be really good and very welcoming and just improve everybody's demeanor and mentality.
Do you think she and Jess will get along?
I feel like yes. It's so hard to not get along with someone like, but...
Oh, I just put it together, though. Is the one who was putting her hands on what's his name?
That is what I'm confused about. It looked like a charter guest who was putting their hand on his butt. Like, is there going to be some kind of flirtation with a guest and that sets Jess off? I don't know, because from my interview with Jess last week, things do not end well with Rob, and we obviously see that in the mid-season teaser as well. There's a big falling out. She's like kicking him out of the room. Something goes down, and it does involve somebody else, which is what she essentially implied in my interview with her. So I don't know. I doubt has anything. I don't think has anything to do with it. It might be a charter guest, but there could be something else more to it that we don't know yet. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, what she was meant to do.
Do you think Bugsy is going to be a good chief stew for the rest of the season? She's very organized and like knows exactly how everything needs to work. And she seems to be very on top of timing, which I think will be huge for Sandy. So we wanted to hear from Hannah after such a big episode. So this is her take on what went down as told on the Below Deck Med after show.
Hannah reacted to getting fired by Sandy, Malia sending the text to report her, and the end of her yachting career.
Plus the rest of the crew, including Captain Sandy and Malia, responded to the decision that was made and explained the details of maritime law.
Let's take a listen.
So things in the boat are about to change in a major, major way. Can you tell me about when you knew something wasn't quite right?
For me, I was really freaking confused the whole day. And then I just remember Rob telling me like, yeah, Hannah just asked me to get her suitcase out of the bilge. And I was like, no way.
I was so confused. We're all scrambling. We're bringing in provisions. And I just see her walking off. And I just remember taking her suitcase. And I was like, bye.
I was walking around the boat and I came down. I remember in the men's lawn and I see the suitcase there. And I remember radioing the boys and being like, hey, like deck crew, we've got guests arriving in 3 hours. Why is there a suitcase here? And like no one responded. And then I just kept remember being like, Hannah Bugs, and she just didn't respond.
It sucked because it was right before the charter and Tom had just joined and I was like, what just happened? Like, what did I just do? What has just happened?
What I witnessed with Hannah was a behavior change that was unlike any other. I said, something's different. She's not herself. She's checked out. Now, if I take her to sea, knowing all of this, then I will be, it's gross negligence on my part to take her to sea. And at this point, maritime law takes over. It's out of my hands.
I just need to do the procedures and the protocol, and I want you to be there for the whole thing.
Hi, Sam.
Hey, oh, you know what? Perfect timing.
Yes.
I need you in here. You're gonna find that. So yeah, you can close the door. Have a seat.
So to me, it was very strange because I was taken like into Sandy's office, and I think I was really confused at first because when she said like, oh, it's been brought to my attention, you have drugs on board. I was like,
Hannah, it's been brought to my attention that you have drugs on board and that you,
my Valium.
I was honestly confused at the start. And then she showed me the photo and I was like, oh, that's my Valium.
My Valium?
And pot. And that you haven't presented a prescription for that. Your Valium was laid out with your pot in your cabin.
That's honestly just in my bag from LA.
Can you just let me finish, okay, please? This is very serious.
You know, when you say, like, you have drugs on board and there is a camera looking at me and a camera looking at you, there is a certain kind of stress that you go through as a human being when you're in that situation.
Having to share that with her was heart-wrenching for me. I took no pleasure in it. I have to follow protocol. That's why structure's in place. So we have manuals. When you discover drugs on board, this is the course you take.
I want to follow the protocol, and we're going to go through this by the book.
Okay.
Okay. The violations are posted in the laundry room. You need a prescription. I can't go to sea with someone doing drugs. So what I would like for you to do is go get your Valium and your pot pen and bring it in here.
You know, sure, clients have had drugs and I've addressed that. Of course, I take it to the primary and go, I don't care, you can do drugs your whole life. Not my business. What you can do is drugs on board and you need to remove them. But if my crew are doing drugs, big difference, because we're liable. And that's really the bottom line. And people smoke pot all over the world. People are prescribed Valiums. And the other part is Hannah didn't check that in. Hannah can't do Valium and have a job on a boat. That's not allowed. Because if the minute you take that pill, you are now my liability. You're no longer my asset. And my crew are my asset in case we have an emergency.
I can't go to sea with you. I have clients.
Okay.
I have people. So are you going to finish? Let me finish. I have the utmost compassion for you, but at this point, for the rest of the season, I'm going to finish it just with the crew.
I didn't know if she was going to fire her or maybe like just kind of have a warning with her. But yeah, when Hannah did get fired, I don't know. I think I was just kind of like, well,
we're not allowed to take medication that alters our mind or puts us to sleep. We have to hear alarms. You have to be able to be woken up.
I think I was really shocked and frustrated. Like I was, you know, I'd gotten off the pill. I knew I was starting a family. I was settled. I was like, you're kind of making out like I'm some person who's like running around doing drugs while I'm working. The ironic thing out of everything is like, I hadn't even had any Valium in that season.
Now we're on an ISM boat. That's major.
ISM is basically International Maritime Standards for Security and Safety at Sea. Basically, what that says is if your boat wants to class to have passengers on board, it has to pass all of these safety and security guidelines. So that means it's a very strict vessel.
Do you know that vessel has cameras that stay on 24/7 that go back to the management company? Because the owner has a big asset with a huge liability. So basically what they've done is implemented cameras to make sure that if a catastrophic failure happened, they look through that footage to see if it was captain error, crew error, where was the breakdown. They have cameras all over that boat. Also in maritime, MCA requires that these particular vessels, you have random drug testing. It's zero tolerance. If drugs were found on that boat, guess who gets the cuffs? Me. Not the person carrying the drugs, because I'm ultimately responsible. Not only that, now the management company has footage. So when I go to court to defend my license, something I've worked my entire life for, I now have footage of these drugs on board. How do I defend that?
She kept saying, oh, I don't feel safe going to sea with her. And it's like, but why? Because if it's for me having anxiety, that came out seasons ago. So I think it was an excuse. I think it was a way that she could say, I'm going to fire her and you can't stop me this time. It just didn't need to be like that.
I just thought, how do we handle this correctly, you know, by the law and, you know, compassionately? But at the same time, you put me at risk by bringing your drugs on board. So that really pisses me off.
So Captain Sandy receives a photo of what appears to be in Hannah's possession, and she tells Hannah, you know, what has been brought to her attention.
Hannah, it's been brought to my attention that you have drugs on board and that you...
My Valium?
And pot, and that you haven't presented a prescription for that. Your Valium was laid out with your pot in your cabin.
When we were changing cabins, I noticed it wasn't just Valium, there was a weed pen. It's a huge thing to have illegal drugs on the boat. And she knows that. She knows better.
So I knew that Malia was mad at me because I didn't want to switch cabins so that her and her boyfriend could bunk up for a few weeks.
So because you and Bugs can't just share a cabin, you're going to make four other people.
I'm not going to go out my way to cater to people who've been making out for 3 weeks.
But I'm in an actual relationship.
So everyone just changes for the couples.
Yes. Okay. That's cabin arrangements. If you hire a couple on a
boat.
We
didn't hire a couple.
F***ing man up and share a cabin.
Like, it was direct revenge. And that's really low to me.
Between Hannah and I, things were actually fine. And we did actually, you know, I felt like when she had her panic attack, I felt like we did bond and, you know, we were fine. You know, some people saw it as me wanting to get my way with the bunk situation. I already had my bunk. I wasn't thinking about those things. All I'm thinking about is doing my job the best that I can and ensuring that everyone on board is following rules. And just because Hannah is Hannah and just because she's the chief steward doesn't make her an exception to the rules or maritime law.
That action, like for what I did, which is go like, hey, I actually don't want to share a bunk with Bugs because, you know, our work relationship's going well. So she doesn't want to, I don't want to. Can you just wait 2 weeks and then you can sleep in the same bed as your boyfriend as much as you like? I don't think that deserves a reaction like what Malia ended up doing.
Obviously, I'm human and I feel for Hannah. Like, I really do feel for Hannah. I think there's always been like this miscommunication between us, and we're both very strong women and we're both very, you know, I think her and I kind of have the same type of hardships in our life, and I relate to her big time.
This was you taking a photo and going to take it to the captain because you were pissed off that I didn't want to switch cabins mid-season so that you could have cuddles with your boyfriend. You're literally going out your way to try and fuck someone's life up.
I obviously didn't report the Valium the first time that I kind of realized that she was taking it. You know, I was pretty shooken up after that night too, as you can imagine. And as much as that is her own medical privacy, it's also a concern for the bridge because she is an active duty crew member. So as someone who's training to be an officer and Captain Sandy being, you know, the captain, that is something that we have to discuss because you always have to keep in mind if it's safe to go to sea with the people that you have on board. She's our chief stewardess. So in the event of an emergency, her muster duty is to, you know, take care of all the guests. That's 12 other people's lives that she has to, like, you know, handle. I think another important thing to stress is that it doesn't matter that Hannah's going to bed when she takes medication. She's still an active duty crew member. Fires don't just happen, you know, 8 to 5. When we're at sea, we are literally miles offshore where, you know, we then have to launch rescue boats. We have to don firefighting gear. Unfortunately, no, you can't just take medication on your own in your cabin and still stand active duty. That's just not how it works at sea. And that's not me saying anyone who suffers panic attacks or having a go against, you know, mental health. What I'm trying to say is if you are someone that does suffer panic attacks or you do have a serious problem, you just have to go through the right way, the right structure on a boat so that we can ensure your own personal safety and everyone else's. If I don't say anything and then something happens and then Captain Sandy asks me, well, you were her cabin mate. Did you see this or have you heard about it? That's my license gone. That could be Captain Sandy's license gone, you know, and it happens in an instant. So if Hannah had been taking Valium or she had been smoking weed and let's say a guest tripped and broke their ankle or something, or we had a small injury or a huge injury, the authorities, the port authorities, have every right to come on and pop every single one of us for a drug test. I've had it happen to me before. And if we then fail that drug test, that's it. We're gone. It's just not worth it. If people are going to get mad at me and, you know, say it's out to get Hannah, like, it's just not. There's so many bigger things than just what you're seeing. And yeah.
So after Kiko is dismissed, we see it, you know, it takes a real emotional toll on Hannah.
Yeah. That was her person, you know, like she spent a lot of time with Kiko all the time. Like they had their dynamic. And when you remove the one thing that's kind of helping you stay in a space outside of her man and back home, like you remove that, then yeah, it must have been tough for her.
Kiko was really the only person on the crew that I had a bond with, and he was keeping me sane, you know? So when he left, like, especially in the way that he left.
Pickled tomorrow and then I have to go.
What?
I just cooked tomorrow and I have to go. This is not like, she said I'm not capable for this and blah, blah, blah. But that's what we discussed before, you know?
It was just devastating to see someone that you care about, like, break down like that.
Hannah's the type of person, I think, where, you know, the emotions can just kind of bubble up, I would say, almost without her even realizing it.
I f***ing hate this f***ing job.
You know, it was hard to see. It was really hard to see because, you know, Hannah is very much an empath and she cares a lot and has a very big heart. And so that was the one person in the crew that she really connected with. And so to see somebody that you're really close to, you know, that you work with, you know, go down that way. And then also she took on a little bit of that responsibility of like the Vegas menu, which is actually not her fault at all. I think that that's what really played into that.
Just he was so helpless and broken at that stage as a human being. And then I went to bed and I was just lying in my bunk and I was just thinking about Kiko. And when you haven't slept and you have anxiety and you've had, you know, between Lara and this and that and Sandy, and it's just like, I'm not surprised. I had a bit of a...
Okay.
What you don't realize is I was fast asleep in my bunk. It was like 3 a.m. or 2 a.m. when this happened. I woke up to hearing, you know, like really shallow breathing and crying, and just like, I was like, you know, I got out of bed. I was really like frazzled. Also keep in mind, it looks like in the camera view, it looks like our rooms are well lit, but it was pitch black. I was like, whoa, like for a second, I was just like, what's going on, you know? And then I jump out of my bunk and I find Hannah in the bathroom, you know, crying, having an anxiety attack. I instantly just kicked into like, okay, what can I do? How can I help? You know, I'm sitting there holding Hannah, talking to her for an hour. I asked her if she wanted me to get Captain Sandy up, if we thought, you know, it was going to get more serious. And, you know, we just sat there and talked, and she talked to me about how she was feeling, how she's feeling very alone. I feel for Hannah. I do. I know the stresses of just the industry in general, and it's a lot.
I was so in such a bad place, you know, and I would like take my microphone off and like just go on the dock, like when the cameras had gone down, and just sit on the phone, bawling my eyes out, like hyperventilating, trying not to have a panic attack, because I just wanted to leave so badly. And it's just like, it shouldn't be this hard to just come and do my job. Like, I'm not getting wasted and throwing things. I'm not sleeping in and ignoring my job. I'm not abusing my staff. Like, it shouldn't be this hard and this awful to just do my job.
On a human level, no matter what you get into with another person on the show, of course you don't want anything bad to happen to them. Like, I think people just think I'm this monster that like saw Hannah have a panic attack and then went and ratted on her and didn't do anything in between that time. And that's just not the case. You know, I'm not a monster.
I think as well that like people don't sometimes understand, like, when you're working in an environment like that and you have no way to release your stress, like you can't go home and have a bitch to your boyfriend or go out with the girls and have a glass of wine and get it off your chest. You are stuck on a boat. There is no way to get out. There's no one to talk to. Kiko, my like only buddy on the boat, had been fired. My heart was broken with how he left and how upset he was. And it was just a very bad situation. Like, it's like, honestly, it's really sad to like watch the show and know just, I don't think I've ever in my life been in such a bad place mentally than this season, like ever.
After Hannah's dismissal, you meet her on the dock.
The thing is, Hannah, is my hands are tied legally, but I personally don't want to drive the boat to sea with how you've been lately.
What, like, are you talking about?
Just your hyperventilating and the drug. Hannah, I don't want to get into it.
You know I had anxiety.
You have drugs on the boat, Hannah.
What's going through your mind there?
You know, when I walked on that dock to see Hannah, it came from a place of compassion. That was it. And when you invest in people and you spend, you know, four seasons with someone, of course it's difficult. It's not easy. I mean, it's a loss. It's not easy, but at the end of the day, I have to think about the ultimate goal.
If I go to sea, I'm negligent as a captain.
Okay.
Honestly, I can't.
It's just out of bullshit. That's what it is.
Well, okay. I mean, if that's how you want to be.
To me, it's like, okay, you fired me. I'm speaking to my boyfriend, and then I'm going to pack my stuff, and then I'm going to leave. Like, it hasn't been hours. I've come outside to have a cigarette and, you know, just especially because of the way I was fired for drugs. So it's almost like you've done your part. Can you just leave me alone?
I wanted her to know, you know, this, it wasn't me. I didn't do this to her. And the one thing that I said I will never lose, because I felt like a lot of the corporate people I worked for, they're just so focused on the next thing that they forget you got a human being sitting in front of you.
It's almost like breaking up with somebody and then like as they're packing their stuff, just going up and going like, oh, hey, like, you know that actually like I cheated on you that night I went out and like this and I actually hate your mom. And like, it's just like, okay, you've dumped me. Just let me pack my stuff and leave, you know?
you know, when she made it about me, it pissed me off.
I care about you.
Okay.
Oh, you don't think so? Oh, you don't think I care? Hannah, do you think if I wanted you off the boat that I would use this? Huh? No. It is bullshit, because I could have fired you last year, the year before. So if you want to make it about that and say that I don't care, it's fine with me. I won't care. So now officially, I don't f-ing care. Pack your clothes and you can go now.
You don't know my heart. You don't know my motive. You have no idea. Just like I don't know, I'm not in the mind or the heart of someone else. So that's not accurate when someone says, I don't care. I just wanted them fired. That's not true. She goes, you always wanted to fire me. I go, if that was the case, I would have done it my first season.
It is not cool to respond if a charter guest hits on you.
Okay. Thanks for all the great service.
My pleasure.
See you again. All right.
Jason, you have to bed.
No matter what happens on charter, how many times a guest approach you, you cannot cross that line.
Or my second season.
You've been gone almost 5 hours. Yesterday, we carried you. Brooke worked 21 hours. 21.
Or my third season.
I know you care. This is not saying you don't care. I just thought, you know, this isn't your passion. Yachting is not your passion.
She's been wanting to get rid of me for a while, and she's got Bugs on board who she loves, and yeah, she's just trying to build her perfect little team. I would just prefer, like, fine me for f-ing table decor. They've got enough footage for you to justify it. Just fine me for table decor. Like, it just didn't need to be like that. And I think a big part of me felt like after 5 seasons on the show, I deserved a better into my story on Below Deck.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Beverly Hills?
Yish.
Yish. Okay. Well, I have a prediction that I just put together watching this episode. And I think Denise's tagline is not just a reference to last season, but foreshadowing how this one will actually end for her. Because a lot of times these taglines, they do have a double meaning, right? And we don't really figure it out until maybe like halfway through the season or sometimes by the end.
My life may not be a fairy tale, but I'll always get a happy ending.
And right now they're setting it up to not look very great for Denise, right? But we know she's still participating. She was at the reunion. She's been doing the at-home interviews because we know we have that new look from her. So maybe this season will actually end in her favor. And that's the double meaning of her tagline.
I wanted to say that we start the episode by seeing Lisa Rinna and her daughter do this workout on the surfboards.
Uh-huh.
I've done it. in New York, they have it. It is so hard.
It's like a full body workout.
It's insanely hard.
Yeah. It takes your whole body. You need a lot of upper body strength, right? To just like get up and stand on the board.
Yeah. And then like you're staying up and you're like constantly in like a squat. Like it's a
lot. Is it about the core? Is it like a core workout? Because my core is not great.
It's everything.
The core is where I need the most work.
You would love this class or hate it.
Or I would hate it. Yes, you know me too well to know that I would not love it.
I also just wanted to say that I feel like everyone is sort of having a lot of emotions about Beverly Hills because I got two DMs about our latest episode and like our thoughts about everything. And the first one I want to start with is about Lisa Rinna. Becky Golan, you know, messaged me and said that she agreed as moms or – she's a mom. I'm not a mom, but that
you're a dog mom.
Yeah, it's true. It's good to promote body love and acceptance, but that the moment that she discovered her daughter had an eating disorder, maybe she should have pulled back and, you know, realized that she does have this amazing body. And like, of course, that would put pressure on her daughter. I get that point of view. And I also love anytime anyone reaches out to us to share their thoughts about it. I just don't agree necessarily. I did feel like the conversation between Rinna and Amelia was so good because no one feels great about themselves, which is just sort of the sad truth. Like Rinna feels she's happy in her body, but that really upsets certain people. I don't know. I guess I'm just confused on what the message is. If Rinna was much bigger and she was so happy with her body and confident, would that be a good thing?
Right. Well, I think the biggest point that they made that I appreciate is that shaming can go both ways, right? You can shame someone for being too skinny. And for a long time when I was younger, I was really thin when I lived out in California because I was like smoking cigarettes and just like not probably eating healthy, but people would shame me for it. And that is a real thing that does happen. It can go both ways. I think Rinna dancing is a very specific example of what Garcelle was just trying to say. Like, I think you should be more conscious of the way you showcase your body, because if your body is a trigger for your daughter, there could be some correlation. And Amelia does say in her conversation with Rinna about how Lisa is just a thin person. She's naturally thin. She always has been. So basically what Amelia is saying is there is a correlation to the way Rinna looks and the way Amelia interprets it. Garcelle was basically trying to say, is there a correlation? Not are you the cause of this? Or are these videos, you know, hurting your daughter in some way? But is there just a correlation, you know, between the two? And I think in a sense that there is, but I can also understand why Amelia would feel the need to defend her mom in this situation, because her mom has been a support system for her through this whole entire thing. So it's natural that Amelia would be like, well, I don't want Garcelle to come for you. That's not fair. That's not right. Like, she doesn't know what she's talking about because Rinna's been by her side this whole entire time and supporting her. So I get why Amelia would be defensive of her own mother. You know, it makes sense.
I think no matter what, it's like what Amelia said was people want there to be an answer. Like it just makes things easier to be able to put something in a box and say, this one thing led to this. And now we don't have to worry about it for ourselves or others because it was this thing that caused it, you know?
I mean, even myself, when I was going through all my therapy and my eating disorder treatments and things, I remember for a period of time, I blamed you because you were so thin. But at the same time, it's like, that's not fair, because the part to me that people don't understand is like, I did everything on my own. Like, I was sitting in my room one night crying to myself, looking up diets myself without you knowing about it, without you being a part of it. Like, you're really not a part of any of my stuff. People look for somebody to blame because it's easier and they don't have to deal with it.
Much easier.
Yeah, it's never that clear. It's never that simple. It's never that black and white. It's very complicated. It's a very layered issue. I trust it's going to come up at the reunion. I can't see this being the last time we discuss this. I think it's definitely going to come up as a point of tension between Garcelle and Rinna.
Right.
I also forgot, speaking of Rinna, her connection with Kim, the fact that they have relatives who are dating each other.
So weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just weird to see them embrace and like smile and be getting along I can't even imagine if they did end up at the same Thanksgiving dinner. Like, that would just be hilarious.
That would be so good.
Or like maybe an Easter, like an Easter brunch.
Ooh, with like a bunny.
With like a bunny theme.
How did you like the thinly veiled guise of Teddy's baby shower, but it was really just the unveiling of Dorit's Capri room at the restaurant?
Well, there's nothing wrong with multitasking, right? I think you could do two things at once, and that is debut your redesigned Buca di Beppo room and also throw a baby shower for Teddy. Because also, to be fair, how many baby showers do you get? Do you really get one baby shower for every single baby you're going to have? Because at a certain point, it's like, you must have this stuff.
No, this, can I tell you, it drives me crazy, Eric, because it's like Emily Post rules. You're only supposed to have a baby shower for your first baby. You don't get one for every baby.
Right. And there's also, I know in the Jewish faith, there's not really any showers or anything in advance.
My God, yes. When someone told me that, I was like, you are so lucky.
Yeah, they don't really discuss, you know, due dates that much. Like, I think it's very much like it's sort of this.
Don't jinx it.
Yeah, it's like you don't want to jinx it or anything like that. So I'm like, I'm down with that. I think that sounds great, because even Teddy didn't seem to be like, she seemed excited and she was surprised, but I feel like she wasn't totally thrilled. Even like a few episodes ago when Kyle was talking about planning it, Teddy was like, I don't want to open presents in front of people. Like, I don't want a whole thing. So I guess if it was like a double, you know, debuting Dorit's room plus baby shower, you know, it's fine. It's fine. It is what it is.
I prefer Ashley Darby's let's do a sip and see situation, which we can get into later.
Oh, absolutely. A sip and see is the way to go. That is the future of baby showers. Okay. If you want to send a gift in advance, whatever. If you want to register because you're having a baby, that's all well and good. But the sip and see, that's what people want. They want a little bit of booze.
I will say, as far as baby showers go, this one seemed pretty great because you started talking about sucking on clits.
To when she sucked on her. I have a close relationship with her, okay, bitch?
Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, did she have to get so specific? We all assumed that probably happened in this experience, right? Like, we can infer.
I don't know. Let me tell you something. A lot of men forget to do that step. So I think sometimes it does need to be said.
I mean, it's also, you know, I think Brandy is trying to show everyone what she is capable of. So just in case there's anybody else, you know, that wants to give it a go, you know what you're in for.
First of all, how insane that Teddy kicked out her friends so Brandy could talk about having sex with Denise Richards. Like, what?
That was so awkward, okay? Because, like, you go to a baby shower expecting one thing, and then number one, you get there and there are like cameras rolling and you're like, all right, okay, yeah, they're on a show, I get it. But then for them to like kick you out so that they can talk about this like private thing that's going to be very public at some point anyway, because it's on a show. It's just sort of like,
oh. I mean, I will say it was Brandy being pretty rude, being like, I don't know 94% of the people here. So like,
yeah,
it was just like, right. Okay, right. You know?
Yeah. You guys could have gotten up and gone into another room also. You didn't have to kick these other people out like mid sandwich.
Exactly. My God.
Well, I need to bring up the point too that I brought up last week, and it's that Kyle is really doubling down on this, like, I believe Brandy, Brandy's not a liar. But Kyle has called her a liar in the past. I'm just very confused about this.
Okay, well, so this was the second message I got this week about Bev Hills.
Okay.
And it is from Catherine Russell, and she's like, you know, you guys keep saying, or meaning me, because I have been saying, like, why would Brandy make this up? And she's like, why is no one discussing her motive? Like, for her to make this up makes her relevant part of the story, and then they're probably going to include her in this season, which is fair. That's a fair theory. I just personally think there are too many specific details, and I can't see Brandy lying about this. But that's the great thing about the show, is we can all have – like, there's no clear-cut answer, so we can all just decide what we believe to be true.
Well, yeah. And at this point, too, everyone at that table seems to be totally convinced except for Dorit. And I really appreciate that Dorit is like going hard in defense of Denise, because somebody has to do it, right? Rinna's not really doing it. And Rinna's the closest one to her. And, you know, at this point, everyone at the table is like, no, it's real. Like, I believe Brandy, you know, Erica's on board. Everyone is really like, this is the truth to me. This is what the truth is. And Dorit's just like, it's not adding up for me. And I appreciate that she is coming to her defense, because who else does Denise have at this point?
I can back it all up.
You've got text to prove this, because I'm sorry, I believe Denise.
Do you think Dorit would still be coming to Denise's defense if it hadn't been for Brandy saying her tits were f***ed up?
Perhaps not.
Like, I really do think that that was just... And I get a look. If someone said that to me, I would probably hate them forever.
But you know what? Dorit also has talked about how Denise helped her through something that she went through last year, right? So maybe there is something that Denise knows about Dorit that she doesn't want out there or something. So she's really not looking to get on Denise's bad side. Not that I think Denise would ever really do anything with it or use that information, but I mean, you never really know.
Okay. I want to talk about the texts, though, because what does – at this point, how are you feeling? What do you think happened?
I think that there's definitely a friendship there that Denise is trying to play down and that perhaps Brandy is trying to play up. Mm. And that's not to say something didn't happen between them, like sexually, whatever. Apparently there were bite marks, which we learned about in this episode. But are they as close as Brandy is saying, and are they – not as close, you know, as Denise is trying to make everyone think. It just, things aren't adding up. We're having a really hard time breaking down who's right or who's wrong or who's, you know, telling the truth or who's not.
Right. Because, I mean, the texts only prove one thing, which is that they have a friendship that goes a little deeper than what Denise has said.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's like the little nicknames they're calling each other. They are saying, I love you, like I adore you. But I have a lot of friends that are close friends or, you know, in one of my friend circles, whatever, that I do have those kind of conversations with that I will say, oh, you know, I adore you, I love you, like, hey, little mama or whatever. You know, you have those relationships with people, but it doesn't mean that you're talking all the time or that you are having sex with each other. You know, I think there are a lot of layers to different relationships and friendships, and they had a very strong connection when we saw them meet last season. They were having a lot of fun at dinner. They were laughing and drinking, and there was obviously chemistry between them, but I don't know what must have happened. Well, I guess whatever Brandy is claiming happened, you know, putting Brandy in this position where she claims that, you know, Denise technically cheated on Aaron is triggering Brandy. So like that caused a rift in their relationship, but I don't know.
Okay. You know how in her confessional, Denise says, Aaron and I tell each other everything, and if I had slept with Brandy, he would have said, why wasn't I there?
Aaron and I don't have secrets from each other, and if I did come home and said, hey, I slept with Brandy, he would be like, well, how come I wasn't invited?
I don't know, because he's still someone that I feel like we're all trying to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if the way he comes across on camera is not how he really is in everyday life, you know, like, I don't know. We only see certain moments with him, right? And it's very much shaped how we all are viewing him. But I mean, Denise knows him better than anybody else, but it's like, do we trust her word? I don't know at this point.
Okay. Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
If Danny came home from a night out and was like, oh my God, this one thing led to another, and you know my good friend Heather, we slept together.
Heather, I like the name you chose.
Would you be upset?
I mean, I would be like, well, let's break this down. I'd be like, let's figure this out for a second. You know, I mean, of course I'd be upset. I'd be confused. I'd be like,
yeah,
well, you know, you've never told me that you've had an attraction to Heather before. You know, like, I'd be like, what? You know, like, we really got to break this down. But I think if it is something where we had an understanding, which is kind of what Brandy said in the beginning, and it's what Denise is currently denying, you know, she's always saying, you know, I'm a very married woman. You know, Danny and I've been quoting that a lot, actually, just randomly out loud.
I love that.
Just because it's fun. So I don't know. You know, it's tricky, because if there was an understanding, but then Denise kind of reversed it and was like, well, Aaron can't know about this, then that's shady all around. But I don't know.
I just was wondering because I feel like it was a couple episodes back where there was sort of this discussion where Jerit's like, would someone's husband be mad? Like, I think anyone's husband would be happy that they, you know, slept with a woman. And Kyle was like, Mauricio would be pissed, you know? So I just...
Right. Well, there is that sort of, it's not a stigma, but there is that thought of, you know, straight men love when like two girls hook up, right? So maybe, you know, that is something that
right.
has happened in their marriage before and it's okay and it is what it is. But I don't know. It maybe it's just something that Denise didn't want on the show and Brandy brought it to the show. And it just, there could have been an agreement that they had verbally that was like, Denise was like, let's not talk about this. And that's actually what she said. And then Brandy has now spun it in her own way to, you know, what I think you said, Catherine was the person who reached out to you. Maybe to her point, like that's what Brandy was after this whole time is just like 15 more minutes. I don't know.
And lastly, do you have a friend named Heather? Because that could be weird for her listening to this episode.
I do know a Heather. We are friendly.
Okay.
But, you know, she's not like in my everyday life.
Okay. Good to know.
What up, Heather? Hey, Heather. I don't think she watches Housewives, so we're good.
Okay,
she will
cool.
never know.
And I sat down with E's Nina Parker, host of Nightly Pop and the recent Bravo special Race in America. Here's that interview. So today we have a special interview. It is Nina Parker, co-host of E's Nightly Pop, also host of Bravo's Race in America special. Welcome to the podcast, Nina.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining. I hear you're actually a pretty big Housewives fan.
Yeah, I'm a big Housewives fan, actually.
Which franchises are your favorite?
My favorite, it changes. Right now, I would say it's New York, Beverly Hills, Atlanta.
Okay.
That's the rank of my love right now.
I am into it. If you had to sort of fill an episode, we're going to go to a deserted island with some housewives. Who are you picking? Who are your MVPs?
I'll probably pick Erica Jane.
Mm.
I love her. Maybe I would do Garcelle.
Yes.
I would do Portia.
Yep.
From Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe just to... who else could I get from New York would I want? You know, I probably would invite Sonia just because she's so crazy. She would give us a little relief on the deserted island.
Yeah, spice it up a little. Yeah.
If we need to test anything, we can do it on her because she's not going to feel anything. She's going to be too drunk. So I feel like that'll work. But yeah, I New York is like, I love New York, but they're just, to me, I know people think the Beverly Hills is unrelatable, but New York is the most unrelatable to me. Maybe because Beverly Hills, I live in LA, so I'm used to like seeing people be flashy, so that doesn't annoy me. It's more of the attitudes in New York.
Yeah, it can be a bit cringy, sure. So you are currently hosting the Race in America special for Bravo, and it's been really enlightening for me to watch. It's been, I'm proud that we have been doing it, both as a Bravo and E doing this sort of collaboration. How did the opportunity come about for you?
You know, I really have just been, you know, very vocal on my feelings about, you know, positions of how we are in America right now in race and Black Lives Matter. And obviously just speaking about the, you know, this has just kind of been a constant in my whole career as a Black woman on television, talking about, you know, the different disparities in how people are treated. And so that's just always been me in general. Obviously that got really amplified because I do entertainment news. So it wasn't always a topic of discussion, but you know, whenever there was a room for it, the opportunity, you know, would present itself that I would discuss it. And so obviously when things really went to a head with the video of George Floyd being released and a lot of people, you know, marching and taking to the streets and it becoming an amplified conversation, I was, you know, had the opportunity to speak in it in more depth. And so I think it was just the attention from that, just being able to speak candidly on my show and other shows on E! During that time, that it kind of caught the attention of some people over at Bravo, and they knew that they wanted to have this discussion. And someone from the production company that did the special, the production company is actually run by two Black women. And so they reached out to E! To say, hey, we want to collaborate with Bravo. We want to talk to Nina and see if this would be something that she'd be interested in hosting. And of course, I jumped at the opportunity.
You've really pulled out some really great, I mean, they're sort of horrifying to hear, but it's also great to inform viewers. But you've been able to pull out these really insane stories from our Bravo celebrities about their personal experience with racism. Is there anything that particularly stuck out for you?
You know, it's hard for me because I feel like as a Black woman, there's so many things that are just not shocking. So it's hard because I feel like my sensitivity level is a lot higher, or I should say lower, than someone's watching it who may not be a person of color. So there might be something that someone saw that they were shocked, like Garcelle saying that people thought she was her children's nanny, or telling her that, you know, that she's lucky that her sons are biracial, that they won't, you know, they won't be harassed as much because they're not as dark as she is. So those types of things I'm used to hearing, but to someone who's never experienced that, it, you know, it's shocking. And so, you know, also, I think just hearing that, like, Bronwyn, who lives in a predominantly white area in Southern California, lost friends because they felt like she wasn't sending her message in the proper way, as if there is only one way to talk about racism, you know, so to hear the fact that she lost friends down in the OC because they felt like she was doing, you know, she wasn't being polite enough. That was interesting to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I do think it was great that we included Bronwyn and Leah from New York, because like you said, for you, it's not surprising, but you see it on their faces the entire time. Like,
right.
It's just so hard, you know, obviously it's a place of privilege to not have to have thought about any of these things. But yeah, I think it was good to include them in that conversation.
And they had different experiences. You know, Bronwyn came from a place where this was all new to her. Bronwyn was basically saying, you know, I wasn't necessarily a Black Lives Matter supporter before this year, you know, but she said that being in the pandemic, having a lot of time on her hands, it gave her the opportunity to research and really look at videos and read articles and see how people were being affected. And it affected her and her family, and she wanted to do something about it, where she said before, maybe they were a little too self-absorbed and they were too involved in their own lives and getting to practice, and the pandemic slowed them down enough to where they were able to really pay attention and with thought. And with Leah, it was different because, you know, she's a New Yorker. She had seen what had happened with Eric Garner, and she had been a part of the Black Lives Matter movement for some years and been protesting and been involved, and felt like she had surrounded herself around people who she considered, you know, allies. So for her, she didn't lose any friendships. She didn't have anybody judge her because this has been something that's been in her life. So even though they were both white women, they had very different, you know, reactions to them being a part of that.
You know, there's always going to be critics. And I know that it's something I've heard, I'm sure you have too, but fans of networks like E! And Bravo are like, look, this is where I go to escape reality. This is where I go to have fun. You know, they don't want it being sort of messed with by any political talk. Why do you think it's important for Bravo and E! As well as individuals to use our platforms to have these conversations?
Well, I think the people who are negative are always extra loud. You know, I feel like the ratings speak for itself. The response online speaks for itself. There were a lot of people who were really, really loving this special, felt like they learned something. And this is the thing. We're not really in that time where you can turn a blind eye anymore, right? So, you know, maybe you, if you really want to escape everything, you have to go to the Cartoon Network or turn your TV off all the way. That's not really an option in 2020. Like, it's if people don't know, you're in the midst of a revolution right now. So it's kind of, you're not able to just kind of escape 100% anymore. It's been something that has been a privilege for some people. Like, I don't have the luxury of being able to say, well, you know, I just don't want to deal with racism today as a Black woman. I don't have that opportunity. So guess what? Now you get to see what it feels like. You know what I mean? To not be able to escape something. And I feel like there can always be a balance. You know what I mean? Like, there, you can still be entertained. You can still gain something and learn something and watch something with a different point of view. I have definitely seen comments where people are just like, this is too heavy. This is too much. But you know, it's how you look at things. It's how you look at a situation. This is an opportunity for you to sit down with your family, with your kids, your teenagers, have these conversations, because whether or not you want it to happen, when you walk out of that door, you're going to be faced with them. Why not be prepared? Why not have a raincoat in the rain? as opposed to walking out and thinking it's going to be sunlight.
I love that. You have such a cool job. How did you get your start?
You know, I actually went to school for broadcasting. So I went to San Francisco State University. I majored in broadcasting. And so it was something at least by, you know, my late teens that I knew I wanted to do and be involved in. And I kind of worked in print journalism for a little while for newspapers and ended up getting my real start in TV as an intern at Crown 4 in San Francisco, where I kind of got this internship through college and then ended up getting hired as like a production assistant. And then I moved to New York for a little bit, trying to find my way and failed miserably at that. And then eventually made my way to LA about 15 years ago and just really started from the bottom. So I started as a runner and just kind of worked my way up in the industry from being, you know, getting people lunches and working like 15-hour days. I would kind of do like my job and then I would stay later and be like, what now what can I help you with on this editorial space? Mm-hmm. You know, so I would kind of do like, you know, my 8-hour, 9-hour shift. And then I would just kind of hang out and just be like, I'll help you for free. So it was just kind of like that kind of thing that kind of started to put me in situations where people started depending upon me for help. And then that kind of catapulted into me writing and giving my opinion. And then just kind of, I was working at TMZ at the time when they had just kind of started. And they just really liked my opinion, just these innocuous comments I would say in the office. And they asked me to be a part of the pilot of their television show. And it kind of just took off from there. The pilot did really well. They really enjoyed my opinion. And that's just kind of how everything started for me. And that was a while ago.
That's very cool. Yeah. What to date, what has been your most like, oh, this has stuck with me. It's my dream celeb interview that I got.
It's so funny. I enjoy discussing celebs with my like co-hosts, because I think all of it is human behavior for the most part. Like if we're talking about a celebrity breakup, if we're talking about, you know, weird dating habits, like I think that's all stuff that we can relate to. I have to be honest, I don't really necessarily thrive off of like those types of like getting celebrity interviews. That's not really my, like, it doesn't move me that much. I more enjoy connecting to the people at home. I probably would be more geeked to get like, you know, like I said, like Erica Jane or Portia, people who like I follow on social media, like they would probably geek me out more than like Brad Pitt or Angela.
Right.
Like I the shows that like I love and I thrive off of,
right,
more than any type of A-list actor ever. Like, you know, I'm watching so many different reality shows, and those people who are more attainable, like they're down the street from me, probably would geek me out more than, you know, just somebody on the red carpet.
Who's one celebrity you could talk about for hours?
I mean, obviously people are going to hate this answer, but it's true. It's, you know, the Kardashians are, you know, because people love them, people hate them. There's so many of them. Like there's so many different conversations. I don't necessarily agree with everything, every move that they make, but everything that they do is discussion worthy. So I feel like if I'm talking about entertainment, and inevitably they will come up. And, you know, I mean, it could be anything from, you know, controversy to marriages, to breakups, to babies, the kids are cute. Like there's just so much to discuss. We could do a 30-minute conversation about it. People will probably get mad, but you know, it's like that. But people kind of like getting mad, and then you can still relate to it. I mean, there's every type of relationship in that family, from marriages to breakups to you know, not knowing if people are with a man. You know, it's all over the place. So I think sometimes that's fun to discuss because you can relate to that.
I'm so glad you said that, because that's absolutely my answer too. And I wanted to ask you, because you work at E, do you have the inside track into what's going to happen on this upcoming season? I have to know.
You know what? They keep this like, it is like trying to get something from the FBI, child. They keep this under lock. They keep this under lock and key. This is not a part of anything that I do. Like we kind of find out, we might get advanced clips or something to promote on our show, but we don't really get advanced information. We, you know, we'll get some interviews and stuff, but for the most part, like they keep it pretty close to the chest. Like they're like their own entity within E. Like they kind of do their own thing. They're, you know, they come out when they're supposed to and do their interviews, but I don't really get any like tips or advanced notice on what's happening until most of everybody else does at the same time.
Well, if you were to give a prediction, how much do you think we're going to get about what's happening with Kanye right now?
I think they've been pretty transparent. Obviously, you
know, I do too.
He has mental health issues that need to be addressed. But I think it's really time to normalize that. There are plenty of people, family members of mine that have been diagnosed with, you know, bipolar disorder, who live very normal lives, who are, you know, so I think that there has to be a normalization of that in society. And I think there's no better way to do that than showing that on a reality show. And so I think that, you know, Kim has showed pretty much every aspect of her life, from her using a surrogate to talking about her robbery in Paris. So I don't think that this will be off the limits. I think that they'll just be careful with how it is done, because obviously, depending upon his frame or state of mind, how Kanye perceives it once it's on TV could be a whole different issue. So, you know, I'm sure that there's some moving of the parts going on right now to keep everything copacetic, but I think that we'll see some things.
Okay. Good. That's what I wanted to hear, which is a prediction. It makes me feel better.
Yeah, I think we will. At least Kim's reaction to those things.
Yeah. And because I know you have to really, for your job, and just because, you know, you love it, you keep up on all the reality TV. What are you watching right now? What are you obsessed with?
I'm obsessed with Selling Sunset.
Okay. I haven't watched it yet, but everyone is saying this. And now I'm like, do I get on the train?
Yes. Oh, you would die. If you love Housewives, this is kind of like preparation for Housewives. Like, these girls would be on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills in maybe 5 to 10 years. So they're just kind of, this is all like the breeding ground for it. You can definitely see them. They're like, they would get eaten up on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills in a second. But this is the breeding ground for it. This is what spawns the child of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. But like, this, it's such a funny show. But also, it's fun because it basically feels like Real Housewives infused with Million Dollar Listing. So you see these like beautiful homes. They show you tours of the homes. They tell you how much the home is, how much the person's commission would be. You see them kind of fight to sell these houses, and then they fight amongst themselves. It's fantastic.
Okay, I'm sold.
You have to binge it. You have to.
I want to thank you so much for coming on and for your point of view, not only here, but obviously on Race in America. It's really been so great to watch. And it's been such a nice introduction for you to the Bravo family.
Yeah, I was really, you know, I've never done anything with Bravo before, obviously adjacent with doing stuff with E! And people had, you know, commented to me before. I previously had hosted the Love and Hip Hop reunions for many years and just ended that relationship a little while ago. So people were kind of like, you know, we want to see you do some stuff on Bravo. So this was just kind of perfect and just kind of came at a great time. So I'm definitely happy to be dabbling in the Bravo family for sure.
And when can people catch E!'s Nightly Pop?
Every night. From Monday through Thursday at 11:30 p.m. It's like a little date night show. It's very adult content, so you may not want to watch if anybody is under 18. But you know, it's a good time. It is escapism. We talk about, you know, crazy things and, you know, very authentic takes and points of view, because obviously you can watch entertainment news anywhere, but we really hope that people stay because they love the people that are, they're giving them the information and our takes on it. And we love to have discussions with the people who watch us. We tweet about it. We post on Instagram and talk to the people and the fans of the show. It really does feel like a little family. And so we welcome more people to join.
Great. Thank you so much, Nina.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, let's get into Potomac.
Yes.
Okay, can we just talk about Candace for like 1 second? It's messy. It's getting very messy, and it's almost to the point where it's like not fun anymore. And outside of what's happening on the show, there's already stuff going on where she's appearing to be messy, right? In just everyday life. And now we have it happening on this show. And it's just like, what's happening? What is wrong with her?
It's kind of like how I feel like Jorinda is being right now. It's people who just aren't taking responsibility, even though multiple people are saying, hey, you did this thing. You should apologize.
Right. And she's just refusing. She's spinning it.
She's just refusing. And look, I do get to a certain extent that like, this isn't organic. This is you telling me to apologize. Wouldn't you rather it be on my own terms? But then on the other side of that coin is you should have come to those terms already. Like, that makes you a not great person that it's taken you this long to apologize.
Right. And for what? You know, like, what are you holding on to? Why are you being so stubborn? Like, what is it that you're refusing to accept so that everybody can move on? I don't understand it. It's like there's a glitch in her brain, you know? I also appreciate that, you know, I love Robin, as everyone probably could tell by my interview with her last week. She's just so fun to talk to, and I feel like she's a really down-to-earth person. And she gets loud exactly when and only when she really needs to. And we see her just being like, what are you talking about? Like, no, like, shut up. Like, it's just, I appreciate that she picks and chooses her moments to really get involved. And it's only when she really has to. And I feel like that's an important quality to have in a housewife.
The one thing I will say, though, is I feel like for Monique to go as hard as she did on Candace at that dinner with Ashley and say, you knew to apologize, for her to then at Ashley's sip and see not talk to Charisse about what was happening wasn't very cool.
Leave it alone, Giselle.
You came in, y'all didn't speak. It is an elephant right here. There's the elephant. So we just gonna address it.
You know what? I gotta go.
So you think she should have brought it up at the sip and see?
But I think that Giselle brought it up for her.
Right.
You know, she's like, oh, Charisse is right here. You guys haven't said anything. You want to say something? And her just being like, I'm going to leave now. You can't make everyone else face these sort of situations and then you not be willing to do the same.
Well, it's true because we did see Candace walk out moments prior, right? And everyone was like, oh, she can't take it. She's walking out. And then Monique did the exact same thing. But it does feel like everyone is a little bit rallying against Monique, right? And that's a lot of the stuff that she's been saying on social media in the last 2 weeks as well, just about things that have gone on. I think there's things that have gone on off camera, and I feel like that's what she and Candace are referencing with each other. And I'm pretty sure Monique tweeted something like that after this week's episode, essentially saying, you know, you're one way when we're off camera, and then when we get on camera, you're a different way. You're showing a different side of who you are. And it seems like that's what they're throwing back and forth to each other, that like, oh, you're the one being fake. No, you're being fake. Like, something is happening when the cameras aren't rolling that we're not seeing that's causing, I think, a lot of the tension. And then when they're in front of each other, it's like neither one of them wants to really say what's going on.
Yeah. What do you think it is?
I don't know. It's something where maybe they've been trying to repair this friendship, and then once these other women get involved, it turns into something else. And somebody is being more of a snake than somebody else. You know, I don't know. I mean, from just what we've seen so far, it does feel like Candace is the one doing something that isn't right. You know, just the way she's behaving feels like something isn't adding up.
Yeah.
The audio that we get when they leave that dinner party and, you know, we hear them still talking to each other and there's a lot of tension and they're like, I don't want to do this now. Like, no, we're not doing this now. Like, but when? Then when is it going to be done? You know, like, you have to work this out.
Oh, Jesus. No, don't talk to me. No, we are not friends. Back the get off of me.
I had to.
No, you did not have to. You could have come to me at the party and been like, bitch, no, I'm just home.
No, we're going to talk about this off camera.
It was also at Ashley's sip and see. It's finally Ashley and Candace by themselves outside, and Candace is still like not ready to talk about anything.
Yeah.
Why is everything on her terms? It's not okay. Okay, you have babies in your life, right? Like your friends have some babies. Do you kiss the babies?
I guess like not when they're newborns. I suppose once they get to be a certain age.
I never knew that you weren't supposed to kiss babies. I'm pretty sure I kiss babies.
I think as long as they're vaccinated and everything, at a certain point you can do it.
Well, I don't go around asking, you know, not like is his baby's up to date on its shots. Like, if you're gonna hand me a baby, I'm probably gonna kiss it, not on the lips or anything, but just like on the head.
I mean, how many babies are you going around kissing these days? Because we also have a pandemic, okay?
Yeah, I should clarify, it hasn't been since we've gone into quarantine, but before that, yeah, just left and right. I was like a, you know, baby kissing slut.
I was like a baby kisser. Well, also, I don't know if it's the best time to have a sip and see if there's still some of that that needs to be done to the baby. Like maybe just wait a little longer.
No kidding. Like, I'm sorry. The onus should be on the parents, not on the person who's just enjoying the baby.
I will say I really loved Ashley doing that whole scene while breastfeeding. Like, she just was like, talk about multitasking. She's like, my baby needs to be fed, but we need to have this conversation. So I'm just going to get right into it right here and now.
I know. I really like Ashley.
I adore her. I really do. I also want to point out a little bit that Charisse feels like the Brandy Glanville of Potomac.
She does, except she's not outspoken enough.
Yeah.
Because Giselle was trying to get it out of her at the sip and see, like, why doesn't Monique like you? Charisse knows why. And she was pretending like she didn't.
She is much more vocal on social media, like before and after these episodes, than she is so far within the episode. So, I mean, hopefully we get a chance to hear more from her. And
what has she said?
She's just been responding to everybody on Instagram and Twitter and trying to defend that, you know, she wasn't the one who started the rumors, which at this point we kind of know she wasn't the one who started them, because Robin talked about it in the interview last week. It was one of Monique's friends. I think Charisse perhaps perpetuated the rumor. She was responsible for, like, giving that information to more people, but she wasn't the one who originated it.
Mm.
So I don't know. I mean, it's crazy to think that Charisse is really the reason we have Potomac, and then to see the position she's in right now at, like, the center of this major drama with Monique.
Right.
What about Giselle's birthday dinner?
That was awkward.
Every moment with her and her family so far this season feels really awkward.
You know, and I felt for her when she was like, don't all kids want their parents back together? Like, I've seen the Parent Trap, you know, like, I, you know, you can see so clearly what she wants. And it is kind of sad, but that's just not what her kids want. And I think that to some extent, she's putting on a show for, to be like, look how perfect it all is now. And
right.
It's like, just because that's how you feel doesn't mean everyone's on the same page.
I know. I do feel for her. I really do, because I think she is trying to bring this family unit together, but he also is still not living in Potomac. He's in Atlanta. And this is kind of the first time we've really got to spend a little time with him too, as an audience. And he wasn't really doing it for me. I wasn't really clicking with him as I have with many of the other house husbands over the years.
Which, isn't that funny? Because clearly he has to be charismatic to do what he does, you know, to be like a senior pastor of this huge church. But he seems so shy on camera.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could be something he needs to get used to. Like, I know he has done various televised things in his career, so it's not totally new to him, but I think sitting down at a dinner with your family, with a whole crew around you, lights, you know, you're mic'd, there might be a different kind of pressure there, especially because he's trying to rebuild this relationship with Giselle. He's trying to rebuild this family. So there are a lot of eyes on him. And as we all have most likely heard at this point, there are a lot of rumors out there about him. So he probably knows that he's going into this with a lot of judgment already.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is. And maybe that's why there's still that kind of awkward energy in the air. But I don't know. I'm not totally invested in this experience for Giselle. And I hope that maybe by the end of the season, I'll think differently. But I don't know.
Right. Also, I just think in general, like, let's stop putting tweens on camera. Like, they just never react how you think they're gonna. Like, I don't know. I have these friends who are obsessed with, like, surprising their kids. So, like, every vacation is a surprise. And, like, so they'll take these videos. It's just, kids don't react the way you want them to at that age, because they're not polite enough yet to know that they need to put on a big show of it, right?
Yeah.
But they're also not young enough to be genuinely excited about anything, because, you know, they're teens. They hate life.
Well, yeah, and especially being made partners in a restaurant. Like, if somebody gave that to me right now, I'd be over the moon. I'd be like, oh my God, this is incredible. Thank you so much. I can't believe this. But that's not something, like, kids want, you know? Like, get them an iPad.
Is it Nicki Minaj's ticket? It's a restaurant menu.
What?
Yes. Y'all ready for the drum roll?
Yeah.
In Atlanta, the three of you are partners to own your own restaurant.
Oh my God.
Yes.
I'm actually really excited.
Are you really?
Yeah.
So you already have your own business.
I thought we were getting something.
You are getting something.
I know, but like.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you.
Because they're like, well, what if I want to not do that when I grow up? Now I'm like forced to work in the service industry.
Right, right. No, you know? It's a very generous gift. There's no doubt about that. But it's not one that when you're like between the ages of 12 and 14 or whatever, however old her kids are, like that's not what you want. Let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
What was your rose?
My rose is that Wendy from Potomac is clearly an Atlanta Housewives fan because she was talking about her husband and how he's like a delicious piece of chocolate. And she's like, oh my God, I almost said Mr. Chocolate, which is clearly a Phaedra reference.
Oh, yes. And she took a long sip of that drink she had because she knew exactly what she was doing.
I was about to call Mr. Chocolate. Child, let me not do that, child.
So funny. I love that. I love when housewives are fans of other housewives.
I know. I would love to see some kind of major crossover between Atlanta and Potomac. I feel like that would just be so great to see these ladies interact.
What was your rose?
My rose was from Real Housewives of New York City, and it was Luann losing her patience with Ramona at that kind of final dinner where Ramona was being so particular about this wine and saying it was bad and just like being super critical. And it was just Luann, you could see, was just like losing her patience and just couldn't take it anymore. And I feel like we're all feeling a little bit exhausted by Ramona this season. And it's very obvious that Luann feels the same. So I just appreciated her kind of throwing her under the bus. What was your thorn?
My thorn is from Real Housewives of New York. It's Ramona shitting herself.
I know. I think she made me poop in my pants. She got me upset.
You did poop.
I did.
Was that poop on the rug here again?
I don't know, but I think she got me upset. I did. I did. I actually pooped in my rug.
Like, Eric, I know we just talked about last week how we're both like disgusted by the grossness on Roni lately, but what the actual hell was that?
I don't know. I just don't want it anymore.
She said Dorinda upset her so much, and then it was like on the I just can't. I don't understand.
I don't understand either. I mean, I would say take a page out of Sonia's book, who, remember when she would ride the jitney and travel, she sometimes wears the adult diapers just to make it easier and like just in case. Maybe this is something for Ramona to think about.
What's your thorn?
My thorn, I'm going to have to give it to Giselle's birthday party. It was just too awkward. I feel really bad. I hope she got another kind of celebration where it was a little bit more exciting for her, but it just felt so forced and just, I know that she was trying to make it perfect, like you said, and she just wanted her family to be there. And they ended up having a fine time by the end of it all. But it was just, I don't know, it was uncomfortable. And we'll be back with an all new episode next Saturday. Megan, it's hot, it's summer, and we are still stuck at home.
And your problem with that is, you know what I love to do from the comfort of my own home?
What's that?
I like to binge watch Bravo shows.
And now you can watch some of your favorite Bravo shows, including full seasons on Peacock.
Peacock is NBC Universal's new streaming service, and it's chock full of Bravo content.
You can stream full seasons of Below Deck, Below Deck Med, Southern Charm, and The Real Housewives of Dallas today.
You can learn more at peacocktv.com. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss me one more time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuge, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.